Hi, I'm Notre Dame safety Kyle Hamilton, and you're listening to Single High, a Notre Dame football podcast from UHND.com, the official home of the Kyle Hamilton Fan Club.
Back to throw, Meyer. Looks, rolls to the right. Pump fake, throws the ball. It is caught, Reggie Brooks! Reggie Brooks got it!
Downfield, and Hamilton again, coming over from that safety position and making the interception.
DB's on the field, the Sherron Jones throws.
To go almost 20 yards.
Ishmael down around the 5-yard line. The kick will come down and Ragib will take it. Takes it at the 12, 15, 20, 25. He's at the 30. Afterburners are on. He's gone.
That is the All-American Kyle Hamilton. His sixth career interception.
40, 45, 50. Down the sideline. At the 35. Or right to the goal line. At the 10. The 5. A touchdown.
Here are your hosts, Frank Vitovich and Greg Flamon.
Welcome back to another edition of Single High, Notre Dame football podcast from UHND.com. Coming to you a few days after Notre Dame got back in the win column with possibly one of the most frustrating 23-point victories you'll ever watch a team have with Notre Dame's win over UNLV. I am one of your hosts, as always, Frank Vitovich. And I am joined by my partner in crime, the president of the Kyle Hamilton Fan Club and video analyst at Irish Sports Daily, Mr. Greg Flamon. How are we doing this evening, buddy?
When did you decide in that football game that, I don't like this anymore? When was that?
I think it was the exact point. So, all right. Well, first, my viewing of that game was interesting. Because we were away this weekend visiting my wife's family in Texas. And I've learned a long time ago, you just kind of go with the flow on those weekends. And I ended up watching like a lot of the first quarter on my phone in a car.
Yeah.
Because we were driving between houses. And then when we got to my brother-in-law's house, obviously they didn't have Peacock, because who has Peacock unless you're an idiot Notre Dame fan who wanted to watch UNLV like a sicko. So then it took like a while for me to like figure out how to get Peacock on his TV, because he wasn't home at the time, and like the remotes weren't working. So I'm still watching like on my phone. So my viewing of this game was not the best, but I would say the point where I was like, well, come on, it was relatively early. Maybe it was after the second blocked punt when we couldn't get another touchdown. And I was like, this game should be 35-0 in the first quarter, and somehow it's like 20-0, or what was it, 23-0? Yeah, it was 23-0. But it should have been so much worse, or so much better, you know, I should say. And I think it was at that point that I was like, yeah, my hope that this game would maybe see Notre Dame roll probably has gone out the window at that point. And then the second quarter, Notre Dame just kind of stalls on offense. And it's like, well, nope, it's probably, this is just, let's just hope that we hold on and it's not terrible. That's kind of where I was at, I think, with that one.
Yeah, I didn't think like hold on or anything. I mean, I think after the second field goal to make it 23-7. I was like, all right, this is kind of dumb.
Yeah, it was just like,
it was they had missed some opportunities at that point, and yeah, they were kind of scuffling. And that's when it kind of hit like, okay, this isn't actually that much different than the Stanford game, because their field position in the first quarter was just like unbelievable. Like,
it was insane.
They kept blocking the punts. And, then they had a good punt return from Brandon Joseph.
Yeah.
And so that went down to like the 30. So it was like,
End up with the fumble in this first half too. The forced fumble by Clarence Lewis. That's right, Clarence Lewis. It's like I wanted to say DJ Brown,
At that point, I was already kind of annoyed, right? Yeah. And so, you have all these like short fields, and you're basically getting the minimum.
Yeah.
And so, I was saying. The start of this game, I mean, aside from the first drive, which Drew Pine tried to throw an interception and they dropped it.
Oh, my God. That was when I saw that, I was like, oh, boy, here we go. Was that like the second pass or first pass? And you look and it's like, it hit the UNLV defender. It was like nowhere.
Oh, no, he threw it right to him. I mean,
It was like 3 yards to the right of Mayer.
Pine thinks Mayer's going to stay there, and Mayer moves inside away from the defense. Yeah. So that's not good. They end up scoring, and it's like, okay. This is a game that can happen when things kind of go your way, but you're playing essentially the same. Like, they played essentially the same way on offense as they did against Stanford. It's just that they blocked punts and they got good punt returns, right? And so the defense was playing in a different kind of way. They gave up the one long run, but other than that, like, they were getting off the field, like they had like 9 3-and-outs. So like they're getting off the field all the time, setting up short fields all the time, and you have 23 points out of a possible 35, maybe. Yeah. I mean, so it's just like, okay, you know, and we can't, so you're not doing anything different with it. It's kind of the same offense. And then that's when it was kind of like, I don't like this. This is dumb. I don't like how this is going. And so that's where you get kind of that sour feeling where it has really little to do with the opponent, right? Because if this was Stanford or if it was Cal or it was Marshall or something, you would think, how can you be set up better than this?
Yeah.
You know, you can't be. You just cannot. And so they ended up where they ended up. So that's when it was like frustrating.
It was frustrating. And yeah, just to recap, first drive, 6 plays, 75 yards. Good. Second drive, Notre Dame starts at the UNLV 43, 5 plays, 18 yards, and a field goal. Third drive was 3 plays, 4 yards. That one did not have Notre Dame did not have a good field position to start. They started at their own 18. Nothing really good happened on that drive. Fourth drive, touchdown, 2 plays, 20 yards, because again, set up in great field position. That was the touchdown to Mayer. Next drive, 4 plays, 5 yards. Started at the UNLV 14-yard line, got 3 points. And then again, we have our fifth drive here where we 4 plays, 4 yards, starting at the UNLV 32-yard line, Blake Groupie 46-yard field goal. That's insane. That's 3 drives that were 5 plays or less that ended in a field goal that started in plus territory.
Not even plus territory. It's like one thing if it's like the 50. Like,
it's true.
The worst one is like the 32-yard line.
The 43, but still, yeah, it's not.
Yeah, you can't, it's like, it's ridiculous.
If Notre Dame's defense did this against, you gave Notre Dame this kind of field position against, I mean, I don't even want to say like, oh, obviously if they did it against like an Ohio State or a Clemson, you're like, oh, okay, well, you know, they got points. It's great, whatever.
Even then you'd be like, why are we squandering this?
It's true. But it's not. It's against UNLV. It's a bad defense. So a couple things that I think are worth diving into just offensively, because it's all the peeps are talking about. It's just in general, quarterback position, the offensive coordinator position. I also want to talk a little bit about defense, because I feel like this defense is very Jekyll and Hyde in a very weird way, and I can't remember a Notre Dame defense quite like it. But maybe let's start a quarterback, because you talked a lot last week about how the quarterback position was really kind of the driving factor in Notre Dame's at that time 3-3 record. Both Marshall game and Stanford game specifically was kind of on the quarterback, that if Notre Dame had even a Jack Cohn or, you know, any sort of average to above average quarterback in those games, Notre Dame would have been 5-1 heading into last weekend. But that's not what happened, we know. And then this was another game where you look at it and you are like, yeah, Notre Dame scored 44 points, but I mean, the quarterback stats, not great. Pine ended the game 14-28 for 205 with two touchdowns and an interception. But one of those touchdowns and one of those completions was a little pop pass to Braden Lindsey, which is not, I mean, that is a run, right?
Freeman said it was a run.
Exactly, because it is, right? And it's just like, remember that game, what was it, New Mexico a couple years ago, where like Ian Book had like two 60-plus yard touchdown passes in quotes there, because one went to Davis, and I can't remember the second one. But he had like, it might have been Lindsey.
No, it was Fink.
That's right, it was Fink. So yeah, I mean, that's a run. So take that off the board. And you had Notre Dame had less than 50% completion from their quarterback and one touchdown pass, essentially. One true touchdown pass. When you look at it the last 2 weeks combined, and that's two touchdowns minus the pop pass against two really bad defenses. When you go back and look at it, and I know you've tweeted about, you know, wishing you could get your hands on the all 22 from Notre Dame home games. But if you, I guarantee the Notre Dame coaching staff has probably, you know, chalked it up and said like there was six or seven touchdown passes that could have been had versus the two that were ultimately seen. And it's concerning because the defenses aren't going to get worse that Notre Dame faces the next 2 weeks. And it's also concerning long term. So I guess based on what you had said last week about the quarterback position, anything that you saw in the UNLV game that makes you think any differently or shows any sign of, you know, like maybe it'll get better?
So the sign that it'll get better? No. But so
no,
to be clear, well, because it didn't get better. So the point is, though, is like, I want to be clear about something. I'm describing the play. Right. I am not assigning a evaluation. I don't want people to think I said evaluation because it kind of sounded like that. I'm not assigning any sort of like Drew Pine stinks. Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm saying. I don't think he stinks, and I think he's capable of much better. And we know that because he did it against North Carolina and BYU. He played better in those games. So what I'm describing is his play. His play was bad. And so that's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's a bad player, and I don't think he stinks, and I don't think he's like hopeless or anything like that. I just want to be clear about that fact. But it's just, you know, it was the fact again, right? You have open players, and you mentioned a couple of times, you know, the quality of defenses and that sort of thing. It kind of doesn't matter. The open players are open players. To make the read no matter who the defense is and what it is, right? So when it's 3rd and 6 and I put it on Twitter, if people want to look at it, I put the play up on Twitter. It's 3rd and 6 and you have Michael Mayer to the boundary and you have trips to the field and you're in man and they drop a player into Michael Mayer. So they basically bracket him, double team him, and he continues to look to the boundary and tries to force it in there on a short route. It's never there. Right. You need to come off it. As soon as you see it, I don't mind looking there first because he's the boundary receiver, right? And it's like, okay, if you have man and it looks like man, look to Michael on a short route. You expect him to win, no problem. But then you see the guy drop. Okay, we need to get over to the field. And UNLV ends up busting the coverage, and Lindsey's coming wide open for a touchdown, but we're not even looking. You know, you have Lorenzo Styles on a corner route where it just hit him. He's open, hit him. You know, you throw it short. you obviously have Chris Tyree running wide open. You throw it over his head. That's a touchdown. So so what? There's three touchdowns taken off the board right there. And then you have Braden Lindsey on a go, and you throw it out of bounds. It's not even nowhere near him.
No.
So that's – it would have been a contested catch. So I don't want to just throw that into the touchdown category, but you got to give him a chance.
Yeah.
So those are that's the kind of thing that's got to get better, man. When you have those opportunities, you got to hit them, and they haven't hit them two straight games, and so that's obviously frustrating, right? And then, there's moments when he does make a good throw, like he makes a great throw to Stiles. It's a great throw.
Yeah.
And it eats him up, and he puts it on the ground on third down. You know?
Not good.
No, it's not. So
it's not.
That's the kind of thing where you see it, and you get frustrated, and you say, we're in the seventh game of the season, and we can't these are plays that we can't hit, we can't execute. And so that's frustrating.
It is. I mean, we have seen Pine hit them too.
Absolutely we have.
Which is, again, I go back to what I said last week. The only difference is every time we've seen Drew Pine play away from Notre Dame Stadium, he's looked better. And it's like three times we've seen him play in Notre Dame Stadium where he's not looked like the same. The quarterback we saw at North Carolina, the quarterback we saw in Vegas, is not the quarterback we saw against UNLV or Stanford. And I don't know what the difference is. I couldn't, couldn't tell you, but it is odd. And maybe that's a good sign for this weekend, because this weekend the game is not at Notre Dame Stadium. It's in the Carrier Dome upstate New York to face Syracuse. But it is odd. What do you make of like just the constant forcing to Mayer? I mean, do you think it is still they are, you know, he's still, I mean, still was fifth start of his career. So, I mean, it's not like he's, you know, started a ton of games, but I mean, five starts is a good amount. It still seems like it is like locked in on Mayer, and I get it. Mayer's amazing. He's the best tight end in college football, but at times it is really kind of crippling this offense, just the over-reliance on him. When the other receivers are open, I get if the other receivers aren't open and you're like, well, I could throw it to Michael Mayer, you know, who maybe isn't open, or I could throw it to receivers who aren't open. So I'm just going to throw it to Mayer, but he's got other, it's like not even looking that way at times, which is, I mean, do you see, or do you think maybe we see less of that moving forward? Or, I mean, how do you even go about, like, as a coach, how do you go about correcting that versus just like saying like, no, just stop throwing it to him first. Like, you just call plays like designed not for Mayer?
No, I mean, you just have to impress on him.
Yeah.
Like, you have to go through the read. You have to, you know. And look, he did on the throw to Stiles. He did. Mayer's open, you know. But the initial read is the one, right? The play is designed to get Stiles isolated in man, with no kind of overhang player to the opposite side, and he reads it and he throws it on time and he throws it accurate and it's there and he drops it. And maybe, you know, that's not reinforced, right? He's not reinforced for his good read and his good throw.
Yeah.
So he thinks, you know, every time I throw it to Mayer, no matter where I put it, he's catching it, right? And I just think that's a comfort for him, right? He makes the one-handed catch, and so you feel like it doesn't matter if he's covered or if he looks covered. I can just fit it in there somehow. Yeah. And obviously you can't, right? He's 50% to Michael Mayer in the game. And so, you know, you got to impress on him. Like, you have to go through the read. Sometimes you can get the ball to Michael Mayer, and if it's a good matchup, and sometimes, but other times, like, you got to be able to read it out. And right now he's not, right? And you just got to coach him through it.
And what do you What do you make of Tommy Rees in this, like in the struggles we're seeing, you know, with that at the position? Because on one hand, you know, we just ran through that there's been a lot of instances of receivers open for touchdowns that are not being hit. And that is obviously not on the OC. If he's calling up plays that, you know, have schemed up touchdowns, that's he's doing his job. At the same time, however, I do think that there are times when Rees is not necessarily playing to Drew Pine's strengths. One of which I know you've tweeted about a lot, not just this week, but for even in the preseason, you tweeted about Rees's lack of use of the play action. And you had the stats. I should have kept them open. You might have them memorized by now. But I know he was, 4 of 5?
He was 4 of 5 for 71 yards.
4 of 5 for 71 yards on play action, which means he had 23 attempts, not on play action. So it's like, what I can't quite wrap my head around, to be honest, is why Rees won't call more play action when it seems like Pine is much more comfortable with play action. And the other part, I think that I am having a hard time wrapping my head around with Rees and what he's doing in some cases, is why on all of these like third and mediums does he keep having Pine, who is like 5'11", stay inside the pocket and force throws to the edges that are prone to get knocked down, and because they keep getting knocked down. Like, Pine is not 6'5", who could stand back there and throw over, you know, all these defensive ends, which is the throwing lane that is being created with some of the third down calls. So I guess just in general, like what your take in terms of, you know, how Rees is impacting or not impacting, what we're seeing at the quarterback position.
So I put out the tweets. And, you know, I basically said, you know, I think Rees is doing a good job calling plays and scheme and all those other things. And I do think that's true. There's one thing that I am pretty annoyed about. And it has nothing really to do with the play calls in this game,
mm-hmm.
or even this year. And I'll tell this. What I'm going to say on Hit and Hustle, because I think this will come out after we record tomorrow.
Probably.
Or we show the show. So in which case I'm not ruining it for anybody that if they're watching Hit and Hustle, they'll see it. So there's a play I'm kind of mad about. It makes me mad.
I didn't know you could bring it up. I saw the tweet.
I'm going to bring it up and I'm mad. So I'm mad. And that's what I'm saying. I'll bring it up here because no one's going to hear it until after Hit and Hustle. We record the show. So there's a play where they motion out Mayer. It's a good design. They motion out Mayer, and then they run basically a bubble off of it's an RPO off of a bubble, and it's to Styles, and they have good numbers outside. It's 2-on-2 to block, and Pine doesn't throw it. He gives it to Estime, and the end crashes, and he gains like 2 yards. And I'm so sick of that happening. For the last 3 years, I've been talking about this. And I'm so sick of it that it's like you have Drew Pine and we're watching him against Stanford and against UNLV. And we're watching him try to be a downfield passer. And sometimes he can. When he's on, he can do it. And when he's not, he can't do it. Right. And so to me, it's like we keep freaking running the ball on second and long. And it's like, look, if you don't want to push the ball downfield on second and long, because you whatever, that's fine. But why isn't the RPO game just a staple in the offense? I don't understand why it's not like, hey, when you come in, freshman Drew Pine in 2020, freshman Tyler Buchner in 2021, freshman Steve all you're doing is running RPOs off of zone read until you know exactly when to throw it and exactly when to give. And we're just doing it over and over again. And if you're going to be anything, if you're going to be good at anything, you're going to be good at that. Because those are free yards.
Yeah.
Those yards are free. It's a, you just count. And I know you can count because you're at Notre Dame. And you can't get to Notre Dame if you can't count.
That's true.
And so just figure it out. Count it up. Can you throw a bubble? Can you throw a slant? Can you throw a stop route? They did it a couple times to Lorenzo Styles, right? And what happened? They did it once to Styles and once to Lindsey, and they were both first downs. I don't understand why it's not a staple in the offense all the time. Run it all the time. And I don't understand how you play against Alabama in 2020, and all Alabama did was RPO your face to death. And it's like we wonder, like, why can't we get explosive runs? The reason we can't is because the safeties are just sitting there. And we can't, when we get to the second level, the safeties make the tackle because our backs are not good in one-on-one situations. Okay. Mm-hmm. They don't miss tackles. They don't force miss tackles. Okay. It's not their strength. If Kyron Williams was on this team, he would do numbers, but he is not. So what do you need to do? You need to get those guys out of there. And you can do it vertically, but you'd also do it horizontally. And you can throw it to those guys outside. There was a play in the Stanford game. He goes to zone read. It's not even a zone read because they stopped doing that because we're not doing that anymore. And so what happens? The safety crashes. All you got to do is throw bubble, but we're not even running the action. So it's not available. The safety crashes, and it's a three-yard loss. And I don't understand it. I don't get it. Why can't we do that? Why isn't it a part of the offense? Just it doesn't. I don't need. You don't need to be reading multiple reads. You don't need to be reading safeties, and you don't need to be reading. Is it too high or single high or is it man robber or is it what is it? You don't have to know any of that stuff. Can you count? I think they can count. They're at Notre Dame, and so that is the part that frustrates me, is that we're sitting there watching this quarterback and we keep calling these plays for him that should work if they can read it, but then he's not reading it and he's not delivering it accurately. So you know what? We need to do something different. Turn on any Michigan game. They can – this is one thing. Unfortunately, Michigan is the thing that Notre Dame should be. You get the ball out. They do it all the time. You get it outside and they are good. And you tell the receivers, you can't play in our on our team unless you can block and then you can run and you can catch this and execute it. And you will not play ever. You need to be good at this. And you know what else that does? That gets your DBs ready as well. And what are Notre Dame's DBs really bad at? Coming up and supporting the run on screen plays. And so it's just a weakness in the program, and it drives me crazy because is it a choice? It's a choice whether or not to do it. It drives me insane. And I continue to watch these guys on 3rd and 6 and 3rd and 3 and 3rd and 4. And like you said, we're throwing the ball and it's getting batted down because we're all standing there. And by the way, we're running short of the sticks anyway.
Yeah.
So it drives me crazy and I'm upset about it. I don't like that it's not in there. I don't like that there are free yards that we're not taking. So there's my rant for the day.
Oh, there's a lot to unpack there. One, I don't want to think about Michigan being the standard of what Notre Dame should aspire to be offensively, because that's not what they inspired.
They already aspire to be that. That is their edict. We want to be physical. So then, be physical on the outside. Be physical everywhere.
Yeah. So we're going to that, going back to that and kind of what I asked. So, I mean, it sounds like that is a coaching decision and a choice from the OC. So I what do you make of Tommy Reese's hand what's his role in the struggles? Because like I said, on one hand, he's scheming things up to get receivers open. But at the other hand, you pointed out that aspect about the RPOs and not playing to things that Drew Pine could do. We talked about play action. I just looked up what, you know, even in the Stanford game, Pine on play action was 5 of 9, which isn't necessarily great. It's 55%, but he was 5 of 9 on play action for 87 yards with a touchdown against Stanford. On no play action, he was 8 of 18, 44%, 64 yards, 3.6 yards per attempt with no play action. Like, these are easy to see, these things that we're seeing them, right? So I guess what I struggle with is how can you know, some of these things not be taken advantage of more. Notre Dame, to your point, Notre Dame wants to be a running team to play. And I know if I start to say, or when people say that you need to be a good running team for play action to work, what you're responsible for, because I've heard you say that in the past. But even still, Notre Dame is a pretty good running team. You got a team that wants to run the ball. So I don't understand why there is not more utilization of the play action in a team, in an offense that wants to be run heavy and run first, with a quarterback whose numbers clearly point to somebody who does better off of the play action.
They run the ball 44 times a game or whatever. Like, they're going to – the defense is going to react to that.
Yeah. So, I don't – and, I mean, I, to my knowledge, and I haven't seen every Tommy Rees press conference, every, you know, every Tuesday Tommy Rees press conference, but has he been asked it? I don't recall, you know, him getting asked if, you know, why they're not utilizing play action as much. But I would love to hear the rationale from Rees as to – why they're not, when the numbers, you know, clearly point to, you know, clearly point to it being much more effective.
Yeah.
This is driving me to want to have a drink as we're going through it. But I said no drinks on this one. But because I have a gauntlet coming up here, Greg, I don't know if you saw the tweet that I put out, or I retweeted it, I guess, of what the schedule of games for a Philadelphia sports fan, which doesn't even take into account the Notre Dame games that I'm going to be watching as well over an nine-day stretch starting on Friday. But it is daunting. So, and if you didn't, game one, World Series Friday night.
Of the
Philadelphia Phillies, the National League champion Philadelphia Phillies, who I will fully admit I totally doubted and did not think would get past the wild card. But now that we are in the World Series, I am president of the fan club, just like Greg is a super fan of the Baltimore Ravens since April. But we got game one Friday. Game two Saturday, also Notre Dame Syracuse at noon. Sunday, no World Series game. We got the Eagles and the Steelers. Monday, game three. Tuesday, game four. Friday, game five, if there is a game five. Thursday, breaking the action from the World Series. But just, if you didn't know, the Philadelphia Eagles are also playing Thursday Night Football next week against the Houston Texans. Game six, Friday. And game seven, if there is one, would be 8 o'clock Eastern, Saturday night, coinciding with Notre Dame Clemson. That's a stretch. I don't know if I'm ready. It's going to be the greatest or the worst sports week of my life, is what I feel like is coming up, between two very iffy, not even iffy, I don't know what you would call these two Notre Dame games coming up, between the Syracuse and Clemson games. The Eagles, they actually have good matchups. And then the Phillies in the World Series against the team with the best record in the American League. Could be great. Could be bad. At least we know that I am fairly rational and I don't overreact when I'm watching sports. So it should go well. but anyway, that is why there's no beer on this podcast. Because I was like, I need to just not have anything to drink. I need to eat some salads for the next 4 days. Kind of like the opposite of what you said about Audric Estime a couple pods ago, where you're like, he just eats meats and does running back stuff. I just need to eat vegetables and not have any drinks for a few days to prepare my body for what's about to happen. But it should be fun either way. Getting back to task at hand here, though, Yeah, I mentioned, yeah, we talked about quarterbacks. We talked about the offensive coordinator and the role, you know, he has in this, which sounds like both of us are leaning towards that, you know, Tommy could be doing things better from a play calling and player utilization standpoint. But actually, and before getting into defense, one topic I wanted to bring up is just the quarterback position in general. Moving forward, not just this year, you know, and beyond, because you know, you look at Drew Pine, he's had 5 starts, and after 5 starts, you're like, okay, two were really good. One was like, that's the Cal game where you're like, well, that first quarter was awful, but after that, he, you know, he settled in and looked okay, and then two were just not good. So you don't want to, obviously, like you said, you know, we've seen him be good. But we've also seen him be bad. So it's like, you don't know yet. And you got, you know, it could he be the quarterback next year if Buckner can't come back? And, you know, we got 5 games to see, 6, you know, assuming there's a bowl game.
Yeah.
But so you're looking to next year and it's like, well, can you, I mean, how much can you count on Buckner? Because he's now had 3 season ending injuries in, you know, in his football career, which is a lot. It's a lot for anybody to overcome for one, but it's also a lot to think about of saying like, okay, he comes back and, you know, the shoulder injury is not, you know, not connected to the knee injury, but it is 3 season ending injuries. So it's like, well, how much can you count on, you know, him health wise, you know, to be the guy, you know, in 2023, we don't know what we got in Mangelli. We haven't really seen him, you know, yet. You know, other than that, that little cameo when Pine got his, you know, got hit at the goal line and was evaluated for a concussion. I mean, the Ronnie Paulus is on the roster on scholarship, but, again, you probably that not going to him to lead the program as the starting quarterback. So, you know what, we know Notre Dame wants to add a quarterback for 23, who that is, we have no idea yet. Or if they even will be, because we're getting, I mean, we're 2 months out from signing, less than 2 months out from signing day, and not ideal that there is no quarterback in this class. So you look and you think probably going to have to bring in a grad transfer, but there's a scenario that exists right now where Notre Dame could have 6 scholarship quarterbacks on the roster in 2023. And we might not know if any of them are a real difference maker yet. Cause we haven't seen enough from Buckner to know, you know, we're seeing some things from Pine. We don't know about the others. And I mean, grad transfers or, you know, a quarterback can be, you know, can work out great. They can be not so great though. So what is your thought on the position in general, just moving forward, not even accounting for the next 5 games?
They need to bring in somebody next year. Grad transfer, yeah. Whoever.
Yeah.
They have to.
Yeah. I don't see any way around it. So now you're looking at 5 quarterbacks at least on scholarship next year.
Well, I mean,
assuming Ron no Paulus, transfers.
Is Ron Paulus on scholarship, really? I mean, he is, but he's
counts
never
for the 85.
Play.
But he counts for the 85. That's my point.
Sure. Here's the thing. There is zero chance that if a grad transfer is brought in, both Pine and Buckner are both on the roster.
Hmm.
No way. No way.
I see. It logically, yes, that makes sense. You would, you know, logic would say, you know, one would transfer. But look at it from the perspective of, I mean, Notre Dame is Pine's dream school. He grew up idolizing Brady Quinn. You know, where's number 10 because of Brady Quinn? So it's like, I don't know if he would, you know, say like, well, grad transfers come in, I'm going to go somewhere else.
I'm not saying it's Pine.
Yeah. Well, I'm getting to there too, is that, but then even for Buckner, it's like, he's coming back from injury. So, I mean, he would be in theory back. What was the original time frame for like 2-3 months?
He said 4 months.
4 months. September, October, November. Just says, oh, okay. So, I mean, you would be able to, you know, start training somewhere again. Say it's Buckner in January, which would probably give him time to, but that's not ideal for, you know, I mean, he might say like, well, I'm going to stick it out here and try to win, you know, try to win the job because I'm coming off injury and, You know, he might not have a ton of, you know, big time opportunities, you know, if he were to hit the portal. So any, but let's say still it's five. It's a lot of quarterbacks to carry. And not, again, not thinking that all five, you know, are going to play or would play. It's more just the roster utilization, whatever you want to call it, of the resources that could potentially have gone into the quarterback room. And have 23 still not be a settled room, so to speak. It's not good.
I mean, it's not ideal.
No.
You know, I mean, it, so here's the thing for Pine, right? So let's say they bring in a grad guy.
Yeah.
Okay. If Buckner is still around, then not only would you have to beat out the grad guy, okay?
Yeah.
But then if Buckner is around, you know that's a timeshare because they're going to put Buckner in the game because they want to use his legs.
Right.
So at best, you would need to beat out the guy, and then you would need Buckner to get hurt somehow. And that is the only way that you would have the job to yourself. Right? And that's what you want. The quarterback wants to do a platoon because it would be that for in perpetuity for Pine until Buckner left, I suppose. But then, like, Notre Dame's trying to recruit over you.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, like, for him, it doesn't make sense. He would – the only way I think Pine stays is if Buckner goes, because then there's no natural, like, okay, someone's going to come in and take – reps because of their legs, right?
Right.
And that's even depending on who they bring in. And then that assumes that he can beat out Angeli next year, which maybe we shouldn't assume that, you know? Yeah, so
not necessarily.
Right. So one of them has to move on. It makes sense. If Buckner stays, it makes sense for Pine to move on because he should want to play, you know? NFL or not, you want to play games. You know, he has 3 years left. He can go play somewhere. He can go be the guy somewhere. So there's that piece. And then after that, you know, they got to – I mean, when did Paulus come in?
I believe
– was he 20?
Yeah.
Was he 2020?
He was, I believe he's a sophomore. I'll look it up. I should know this off the top of my head.
Was he an early enrollee?
I believe so. Let me double check here. I'm going to go see what year. Because, yeah, I mean, you just kind of forget that he's, yeah, sophomore class, freshman eligibility.
So this is his, what number semester is it? He was there in 20. Was it
I think he was
he an early enrollee?
Let's take a look. I can't remember.
Because if he was, well, my point is that if he came in with Pine, then he is close to graduating.
No, that's he would have come in with Buckner. He would have come in the
if he came in with Buckner, then that's moot. I can't remember exactly.
Came in with was. It was the Buckner class, not the Pine.
Oh,
class.
Okay. Then he's not even he's not. Close.
He was an early enrollee, though. Looking back.
It's still, though. He's not close to graduating. He probably needs another year. So, yeah. I mean, you would have four on scholarship.
Four is not bad. I just think five is excessive when you.
Well, four. Well, you would have, let's just say, grad guy, one of Pine and Buckner.
Mm-hmm.
And then Angeli 3, Paulus 4. And then if they bring in a 2023 kid, that would be 5.
Which is a lot. Which, I mean, at this point, I mean, it's just not good. Yeah, utilization of that room. I mean, and how things have unfolded. It's just not. If you think of it, it's you needed a quarterback this year in the worst way. And there's a chance. Like you strike out, and there's to me, there's no point right now in taking a flyer on a developmental quarterback because I think that just like you get enough problems at this position right now to solve. Like, you don't have time to develop another, you know, to have somebody waiting in the wings who might take 3-4 years to develop. Because what you need is, you needed somebody who could potentially come in and challenge day one, and be that. And they tried, you know, with the with going in all in on Dante Moore, and that decision is going to, I mean, unless they pull a rabbit out of their hat, and I know, you know, there's the only news that seems to be out there is Notre Dame is trying, right? There's not a lot of names coming out. There's not a lot of smoke, you know, around any one particular quarterback that Notre Dame might be able to, you know, to either flip or, I mean, there's hardly any, you know, top-notch quarterbacks left that are uncommitted that Notre Dame would have a realistic any shot at. So it for Notre Dame to get a quarterback at this point, it's either going to be somebody we probably haven't heard of, or who's probably going to be more developmental, or a flip that is just being really kept under wraps, which, I mean, maybe they, you know, they pull it off, but it doesn't seem like that is going, like that's in the cards right now.
Yeah.
It's just not good.
I couldn't say.
It's just not good. And I think that is when people get upset about, and you, I think you tweeted this, if I'm not mistaken, that when people get upset about like Tommy Rees, like that should be more at like the top of the list of like, you know, kind of the list or the airing of grievances, you know, towards Rees, is that like that is what the room has become. And yeah, he's had some of his guys, like the quarterbacks that are there, like Buckner was his top pick. You know, he can't control the, you know, the injuries, obviously, but it's like that's who he targeted, that's who he wanted, and Jelly is who he wanted. You know, over a guy like Drew Aller, who is looking all right. So it's like, that's to me, I think probably maybe the biggest, I would say, criticism I have of Rees right now is just that what the room looks like and kind of the future, because it's not clear. The fact that we just spent 5-6 minutes thinking like, well, this could happen, you know, it's like, It's not what you want in your quarterback room. Like you want to be sitting here like, well, we have our clear quarterback of the future, or, you know, this is kind of the line of succession, you know, that we see. And it's just, it's not there right now for Notre Dame. And that is, I mean, to be honest, it's troubling for just kind of the future, you know, in Freeman's tenure. And I wonder, now it's very easy to look back and say, well, they should have taken a grad transfer this year, which there's no guarantee that a grad transfer this year, like somebody that they would have brought in or a transfer in general would have done, you know, that much different. I mean, you can't guarantee it. And some of the names that Notre Dame was maybe kind of linked to aren't necessarily lighting the world on fire at their new destinations. But I kind of wonder if last year Freeman went to Pine and was just like, look, I was just the defensive coordinator. I have not, you know, I don't know, you know, the quarterback room that well right now, because I've, you know, I have only been in this head coach position for a little while. You tell me, should we push hard for one or not? And maybe took Rees's word for it. And, you know, I wonder if in retrospect, you know, Freeman would have done things differently. And I wonder, you know, how differently things will play out this offseason between, you know, the two, you know, when it comes to, you know, what Notre Dame's going to do.
I mean, it's hard because, like, the grad transfer thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about Slovis and Daniels, really.
Yeah.
And neither of those guys look really good.
That's what I was saying. Like, the names that they were linked to are not.
And not just that, but, like, what if they had gotten hurt?
True.
Is Buckner even on the roster at that point? You still might have ended up with in this situation.
True.
You might have ended up in a worse situation because then you don't have Buckner to like say, oh, you know, maybe he'll get back and get better, right? So
right.
you'd have a grad transfer that didn't work out, and then you'd have to face the prospect of another grad transfer next year and hope that works out. And that would be three straight years of a grad transfer. Right?
Which is not ideal.
But which is, I mean, not, that's not what you want.
So. It's not what you want. Not at all. But, I mean, at the same time, you want a top – you want a five-star quarterback commit. We don't have that either. So
no, you do. I mean, it's true.
Well, for maybe, yeah, for 24. But so, I don't know. I mean, we could be looking at a situation where it's going to be grad transfer 2 years in a row. Could. We don't know. We got to see how it plays out. All right. There was one thing I wanted to talk about on defense before we get to – you know, two questions. And while we were chatting there, I also looked up Drew Pine's season stats. Wait, where did this go? I looked up, here we go. I got Drew Pine's season stats, play action versus not play action, split, aggregate over the course of the year. On play action, Drew Pine is 27 of 37, 73% completion percentage. 416 yards, 11.2 yards per attempt, 5 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. On no play action, 122, or sorry, that's total dropbacks was 122. He is 66 of 109, 60.6%, so a 13% drop off in completion percentage, 661 yards, 6.1 yards per attempt, so 5.1 yards per attempt less. On no play action, 7 touchdowns, but 3 interceptions. All 3 of his interceptions that he's thrown have come with no play action. I don't get it. Just do more play action.
Works.
And it's he's got, I mean, rough numbers. It's about 3 times as many no play action dropbacks. Not great. Not great.
Nope.
So, okay, the thing I wanted to talk about defensively before we get into questions is you mentioned it already. Notre Dame had like the 9-3 and outs. The thing that is just very odd to me about this defense is it kind of seems like it's almost like the reverse of the old Clark Lee defenses, where the 3 and outs weren't necessarily as common, but Notre Dame would let him move the ball. But, you know, they'd get close to the goal line, the defense would stiffen, and, you know, it was very, you know, obviously very bend, don't break. That was kind of the mantra of those defenses. This defense seems like it is either 3 and out, or they just let you drive down the field, and once you get to the red zone, you're, at this point, almost guaranteed to score against Notre Dame. Opponents are 17 for 17 in the red zone against Notre Dame with an 83% touchdown rate. I tweeted that out, I think, on Sunday, which is just mind-blowing because last year Notre Dame had a 38% touchdown rate in the red zone. And Marcus Freeman, that was Marcus Freeman's defense, and Marcus Freeman is still here. So I can't remember a defense like this, though, where it's like they get so many 3 and outs, but then also allow all of these long drives. And it's very odd to me. Can you remember a defense that's been quite like this for Notre Dame?
Not that's been so bad in the red zone.
Yeah.
That I can't remember that ever really being the case.
No.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of weird, right? Like there's a lot of like quarterback scrambling in there too.
No. And just like bad, like they had, no, I forgot the kid's name already. The UNLV quarterback wrapped up on that 4th and 2 or 3, something around that. I forget the exact yardage, too.
It was 4th and 2, yeah.
4th and 2, they had him wrapped up. Like, they had him wrapped up for a sack. Could have had him short of the sticks once he escaped the pocket, and he dives forward and gets the first down. And you're just like, that was it. That would have been the first stop in the red zone. And instead, they score a touchdown. Not good. UNLV was 3 for 3. With 3 touchdowns in the red zone.
Yeah. I mean, at least they limit red zone possessions, right?
Yeah. Silver lining. It's wild to me. I just don't know. Like, it's hard. And I know Freeman was asked about it a lot today. Because it's like, I am not the only one that saw that on Sunday, obviously. You know, everybody on the beat. You know, it was okay, 3 for 3, 17 for 17 on the season. And again, it's one thing if you're letting Ohio State score three touchdowns on you in the red zone, which is, again, it's not ideal by any means, because, you know, you don't want to, when you get down there, you want to be able to limit the damage and force field goals. But it's UNLV, man, and they're playing with a backup quarterback, backup running back. Like, it's not even like you had the full UNLV. And what's so wild, though, is like all the other drives were like just stuffed, right? Foskey's getting three sacks in the first quarter, and it's just, it's weird. And it actually is like one thing that I'm like, that is just, it's so odd, and it's so out of, like, I'm gonna say out of character, but it just seems like such an bizarre stat that I can't see it holding. Which makes me think that maybe, like, that they're, you know, the defense is going to get, you know, better over the course of the next, you know, five games in some regards. I know you got better offenses, or some better offenses than what we've seen the last 2 weeks. But, I mean, do you make anything of that?
It seems kind of, like, fluky.
A little bit.
Like, same thing with the turnovers, too. Like they forced five fumbles in the last two games
and
got one. You know, like, they're not, like, it's weird. They're not, like, tipping ball. Like, you know how Notre Dame's getting balls tipped all the time? Like, Notre Dame's not doing that.
No.
Which is, that's weird too, you know? A lot of that feels like it's just one of those years. Like, honestly, like, whatever you set the over-under at, like, turnovers created or turnovers forced next year, I would say take the over just as a regression to the mean kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's what that feels like. I mean, it's kind of hard because – so you look at this game. They had the – they did nothing in the first half beyond the one big run. And Freeman and Jamie was talking about it too today on Power Hour. Like, they did scheme it good in terms of UNLV. They schemed it right. They got an opening. And then DJ Brown misses the tackle in the one-on-one. And then they're off to the races, right? And then, so then the rest of the half, like, they literally do nothing. It's like they weren't even like close. You know, so there's that. And then in the start of the second half, they do nothing. And, you know, they can't get anything going. And then they get another long run. And like you said, they got him on fourth down. And they've kind of got him. No one really has him. But then, like, Bertrand comes. Like, he's squatting because a running back's in man. And then the quarterback's kind of spilling to him. And he has, like, free run, like, there's no one there, and the quarterback doesn't really see him, but he kind of overruns the play, and the quarterback just kind of gives him, like, a little juke, and he completely whiffs. He misses him, right? Like, he maybe gets a hand on him, you know? Yeah. And it's like, well, shoot, man, if you're going to be unblocked and you're going to be one-on-one with the quarterback, we need you to make the play, right? Like, it's just not that difficult. And so there's that. And then, so that's like, you know, those are two drives where it's like, those aren't really drives, you know, like two explosive runs get you down there. Like, that, what did they have? Like 20, they had like 26 yards on like the 28 other carries they had.
Yeah.
They would have ended up with like 170 total yards on the game without those two runs. And it's like, obviously the runs count, right? So I don't want to do that. But I'm just like, when you're looking at the defense in totality, you're talking about two really bad plays and then like 59, you know, solid plays, right? Where it's like you're creating a bunch of sacks and havoc and tackles for loss and all these other things, which you should do. It's not like, you know, that's one where it's like, okay, you're not playing Ohio State. So, you know, there's that. I think there's a thing with the defense where it's like, you look at, they're not giving up a ton of points. They're not creating turnovers, obviously. And look, in the two losses, right, that Notre Dame has a fourth quarter lead against Marshall and they give it up. And you have a fourth quarter lead against Stanford and you give it up. And not only did you give it up, but you gave it up right after Notre Dame took the lead, right? So the lead, like Notre Dame never got the ball back with a chance to extend the lead. It was only like, you know, we're down again, you know, the next time they got the ball.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then like Notre Dame goes and fumbles, and then Stanford continues to get first downs until like the very end, and Notre Dame holds them when Stanford's basically just trying to run out the clock. So it's like that's not like a good fourth quarter for the defense. Mm-hmm. No matter what happens, like you gave up a lead in the fourth, and that's not great.
No, I still think there is something about a lot of the defense not still thinking too much. And I mentioned it last week. Maybe it's the three defenses in 3 years, since it seems like Golden did change things up somewhat. Obviously, things are doing a lot of different things this year than last year. And I think like one of the trips to the red zone stood out to me specifically for Marist, kind of highlighting that when Notre Dame's players are just reacting, they, you know, things look better, right? And it was the first trip to the red zone. I want to say it was first or second down. Marist just comes flying off the corner, stuffs the running back in the backfield, and they go from like first and goal or second and goal to one to like third and goal or whatever it was. I forget if it was first or second down. And then it was like the very next play, they ran that like little option, and you watch Marist, and he is like, he's watching the quarterback and like he's just waiting almost. And he didn't really force the pitch. Like he didn't force the quarterback to pitch too early. He didn't take the running back. And it was like he was just more like kind of waiting instead of just attacking. Whereas if he just goes right at the quarterback immediately and either hits him or forces the pitch early, you know, maybe things work out differently. But instead, he kind of waits. Quarterback pitches, and then Marist chases the running back, and the running back gets to the end zone. So it stood out to me where I'm like, you see the play before, and it was just like react, boom, tackle for loss, next play. They're still not maybe getting down their exact assignments. Whether or not they start to get them over the final 5 weeks, I don't know. The fact that we're at 7 games and that's still happening is not a good indicator that that's going to exactly work out, but I mean, we did see this defense also flip a switch last November. Granted, they were playing some pretty bad offenses, but Notre Dame went from playing, you know, defense in the beginning of the year where they were very susceptible to the big play to playing a little bit better defense in October, and then the defense looked great in November. Again, granted, it was UVA without their star quarterback. It was Georgia Tech. It was... who am I missing? Navy and Stanford, right? Was it Navy? Is that the third game in game in? So,
I think so.
So you're not like you're playing, you know, great offenses, but still. So we'll see if that we start to see more of that, maybe, hopefully. I mean, again, you almost have to, you know, things have to at least start to bounce Notre Dame's way, at least a little bit on defense, because they are definitely not this year in any way. All right, let's jump to questions because we're already at an hour. We don't have a ton this week, but still some questions nonetheless. And I also forgot to check on the no new reviews to read. So we'll go right to the old questions. We're going to start with Chris Scheiber. Says, how do you think you would view the team if the rest of the games played out exactly the same, but two cherry-picked events happening, resulting in close Notre Dame wins and being 6-1. Those two plays that Chris outlines for us here are Buckner hits Lindsey at the end of the first half versus Marshall, and two, Pine hits a wide-open Lindsey versus Stanford. Man, that missed like a Marshall. That missed a Lindsey against Marshall feels like an eternity ago.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like a whole different – I mean, because of Buckner, right?
Yeah.
Like Buckner playing feels like it never happened. Like that feels like a fever dream. How do I feel about like this season?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you feel better, right?
Right. I mean, you almost feel like last year in a way.
Right.
I mean, yeah. Granted, we were showing signs of turning things around more by late October last year. And again, because even the offense was like, it was getting better in October, and then November it was just like, wow, we just score 40 points somehow every week. Yeah, I mean, you feel better, but I mean, I think those close wins, you're still probably like, okay, this is, you know, you're probably thinking like, this is a redo of 2020.
I mean, honestly, like no one would care because because you won the tough games. So like, the tough games, it's like, it's, you know how I said like throw away Marshall? Well, losing to Stanford, like now, kind of Marshall comes back into play.
Yeah, you can't throw it away.
You're almost throwing away like the two wins because it's like you feel like, well, though, are those real or were those mirages, you know? And you felt like the Marshall game was the mirage. And instead, it's like you're not sure if that's North Carolina and BYU, right? Because they're the two better teams, obviously.
Obviously, yeah.
So if you win those games, you think to yourself, hey, like, win is a win. Like Freeman, first year coach, he's figuring out, like, they still know how to win these games, right? And you're 6-1. Yeah. If they were 6-1 right now, they'd probably be top 10. They're definitely top 10, actually. It's not even a question. They're a top 10 team. And so that's how we'd feel. We'd feel like, you know, a flawed roster, you know.
You'd be feeling great, actually. Yeah, now you're talking about it. We probably would be feeling great because we would be thinking
flawed roster, like grinding it out with the backup quarterback.
And reinforcements are coming in with the best recruiting class in Notre Dame's had.
Right, and yeah. And like, we have this huge game coming up against Clemson. And if you beat Clemson, we'd be talking playoff run, honestly.
Playoffs? We're talking playoffs?
We would probably be because if you beat Clemson and USC, Clemson's going to be top five, and USC might be top five by the time that comes. There shouldn't probably be top 10.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where it'd be.
It is wild. We have a win over a top 25 team and two losses to terrible, terrible teams because North Carolina is in the top 25. Only loss North Carolina has had all year to Notre Dame. Wild. All right. What could have been? What could have been? Next question. Obviously, it's a three-parter because it's from our friend Oscar at Vamos Irish. One, it goes along with some of the stuff we're talking about on defense, but is the defense too simplified and too easy to plan against?
You know what? Maybe. I would say, but what I would say is Jamie put out a bunch of stuff on third down.
Yeah.
And they did a lot more on third down in this game.
Yeah.
So I was happy to see it.
Optimist in me right here, Greg. And this is not IPAs talking this week because I haven't had any. So third down was a problem heading into that game. They did a lot of good stuff. Third down was not as much of a problem. And three and outs, right? You don't get three and outs without stopping them on third down. So, I don't know. Maybe it's like, okay, we're going to try some stuff on third down differently. Maybe this week they're like, okay, well, we got to try completely different stuff in the red zone because whatever we're doing is not working. So maybe they start to get the red zone figured out too, since they've shown they can kind of address some things, on the fly. But, I mean, whether or not, I don't know if it's too simplified. I think it's more the players are just still – they're not – if it was too simplified and it was easy to plan against, I think we'd see more jailbreaks. I think a lot of the plays that we're seeing, though, are not necessarily jailbreaks where they're just getting players wide open and, you know, walking into the end zone. You're seeing missed tackles. You're seeing sitting back to the DJ Brown one was rough, man. He – probably didn't like film review this week based on that one specifically. But it's other than the one run against UNLV, they're not like scheming things up. You know, it's more, you know, missed assignments, bad tackling, things like that. And I think a lot of that is a product of not necessarily, you know, playing fast because you're in your third defense in three years. And it's we're seeing some of that play out. Next question from Oscar. Baltimore won their game with 16 pass attempts and 44 run attempts. Will Notre Dame look to the Kyle Hamilton model and play it the same?
They might try. They might. They might.
Still won't play action, even if they run it 44 times. It'd still be two play actions out of 16 dropbacks.
I mean, in my opinion, you know, I think you have to give Pine the chance to be to put up a good performance. That's what I would say. At this point, you've tried it. Because if you try to just be like a full – because that will then sap his confidence. If you know it's like we're just running it all the time, they don't trust me.
Yeah.
Then when you do try to throw
– I mean, kind of. It's what they did in the late third, fourth quarter. They took the ball out of his hands, and they said, we're running it.
But it's like that's within the game. I don't think you can
yes
go –
Yes and no. It was early.
When?
It was early. It was third quarter when they decided.
It was like the middle of the third quarter.
We are just not going to pass the ball again. And was it like 16, 17 straight runs?
Yeah, it was.
And
a
the
bunch
only
of
pass
runs.
Being the pop pass to Lindsey. That was play calling that said like we're taking the ball out of your hands right now.
That's like Pine knows like I'm not playing very well.
Right.
Right. So it's like I get it. But if like you go into a game and you know the game plan is like we're gonna throw it 16 times. Now it's like you don't trust me. And I think that is like not the way to go. I think you gotta do it like, hey, we believe in you. And not only that, but like it'd be one thing if they can't protect him. They can protect him.
They can.
Their protection is good. So look, if he's sitting there with clean pockets, you gotta count on him.
Yeah.
This is what they are. They gotta do it.
I'll tell you what, just listening to Freeman today, you know, talk. I mean, if there's anybody that can get his players to believe that their coach believes in him, I think it might be Freeman, because he had me being like, you know what, things aren't that bad. This is like, it's good right now. I was like, okay. You could kind of see, you know, just again, the way he talks, it's like the anti Lou Holtz. Right. Lou Holtz was always like, well, you know, we're playing Navy and they might beat us by 50. Right. And Freeman is like the opposite, which and we'll see how, you know, how it, you know, how's it working in the long haul. But I do think that he'll be more than capable of getting, you know, Pine to, you know, to feel like that he and the staff are behind him. Last question from Oscar. What are your top three fruits?
One banana.
Okay.
Two apple.
Oh, okay.
Apple with peanut butter, man.
Yeah.
Shoot, banana with peanut butter. Yeah. And then three. I'm gonna go with like that just perfectly ripe cantaloupe.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
you love it.
I love it.
Wow.
It's hard to get, but that's
you might be the first person I know who like actively would seek out cantaloupe.
It's if you got to get it perfectly right, man. If you get it the good ripeness.
Yeah. All right. So mine are completely different, which is good. Yeah. So because he said top three. Like, I mean, these are probably not going to be the three I eat the most regularly, because bananas would be up there, because those are, you know, we always have those in the house. Very versatile. Put them in a lot of things, love them. But I think if you were to ask me like top three that I would, you know, that I would eat. Well, one is actually, you know, some people might not even, you know, realize that it is a fruit, but an avocado is a fruit. And that is love an avocado. Love avocado on a lot of stuff. Just throw it on almost everything. So love avocado. Strawberries, always probably my favorite. Just like to fruit to just eat on its own. And then also mangoes. Love mangoes. But also, I mean, those are like, I think to me, mangoes, like it's like the Notre Dame defense of fruits. When it's good, it's so good. But there's a lot of times that it, that you know, it doesn't it misses the mark a little bit. It's very, very, I think Mangos are Jekyll and Hyde like that, where there's some not great ones out there, and they're a pain in the ass to cut. I will say that. So that's why we don't get them in the house that often, but do love them. All right, we got Drew Brennan at Drew Brennan 77 says, I think we can all see the Irish beating the Q's this weekend. I don't know, Drew, if everybody can, but I appreciate the optimism to start. What are your three keys for an Irish victory on Saturday in the Dome? As part of this question, do we see the Pine we saw against BYU and UNC, or the Pine from UNLV, Cal, and Stanford? So, I mean, three keys. I don't know. I mean, I think we probably talked about them already in parts of our answers. To me, it's Pine has to be the quarterback we saw against BYU and UNC. If he's not, then there's no chance for Notre Dame. I can't see Notre Dame winning this game if we see the Pine that we saw the last 2 weeks. I just can't. Syracuse is a lot better than both of those teams. So I think you have to do that. We have to see Notre Dame's red zone defense be much better. Like, hell, I don't even care if they let Syracuse score every time they reach the red zone, as long as every time they score, it's field goals. If Syracuse is 4-for-4 in the red zone with 4 field goals, I wouldn't be that upset. I probably wouldn't be happy, because I would like to see us get one stop in the red zone this year. But you can't let them be scoring touchdowns every time they get down there. So there's that. And then I think the other is you need – I'm torn between pressure, you know, getting pressure and getting in the backfield and creating turnovers. So I'm just going to say just more disruptive plays in general, because we've seen a little bit of an uptick in that, but still not what we're used to seeing. And you're going to need – I don't know if, you know, we can't count on 2-block punts from Isaiah Foskey again this week, but you need many more disruptive plays than we've been seeing.
I would say the line play on both sides, I guess, mm-hmm. that needs to be on point. It'd be nice to – Syracuse turns the ball over a lot. Yeah. It'd be nice to win the turnover battle in this game.
It would be. I mean, you have to. Yeah.
So that's one. And then red zone scoring, I guess, on Notre Dame's end.
Okay. That's fair, too.
You know, to be honest, like, I'm not going to sit here and cape for Syracuse. I don't think they're that good. And if Notre Dame doesn't win this game, I'm going to be pretty upset.
Ooh, okay.
I'm going to be pretty mad.
You'd be pretty mad. Okay.
Well, like, why do we care that... Why do we care that they lost to Stanford?
Because they should have won the game.
Why should they have won the game?
Because they're the better team.
Right.
And they had every opportunity to. It's not like those games. We talked
about this. Just going into it.
Even going into it. But even it's like there are times when a better team gets outplayed. And you just say, like, it was just a, you know, like, well, they beat us today. But that was Notre Dame squandered too many opportunities in that Stanford game. And it was like the frustrating thing was they're the better team, and it was they lost that game more so because of their own mistakes versus anything that Stanford did, and that's what made it so frustrating to me.
Well, right, it's that Notre Dame's better than them, and yeah. So and you already kind of goofed it off against Marshall, and then you went and goofed off again, and so, like, as you know, right, I've been pretty chill on Marcus Freeman. If Notre Dame loses this game, I'm gonna start to get pretty upset.
Whoa. Okay. See, that's funny, because I'm looking at this and I'm like, Syracuse is a lot better than we thought.
No, I don't care. Honestly, I don't care.
I have, like, to Notre see Dame, how they lose.
Marcus Freeman. This is the eighth game. I've seen the quarterback stuff and I get it and all that other crap. Like, okay, if you don't have them ready to win against Syracuse, I'm going to have some real questions.
All right.
Just figure it out, man. Like, Syracuse is not better than you. And I don't want to hear – like, they're not. They've been playing better, but they're not
playing better football than
– They've been playing better, but honestly, like, a lot of that is smoke and mirrors too. And I'm just not trying to hear about it.
21-7 on Clemson. That's 21
to, they were up 21-10. But I mean, look, you're on the way to losing against.
You're up 21-7, sir.
You're on the way.
Well, and then 21-10.
Okay, got it. I mean, what? You get a 90-yard, you get a 90-yard fumble return when Clemson's about to go in to score. So that's a 14-point swing. And then you're up. Congratulations, you didn't score any points in the second half, and then a one-dimensional team went and put it on you, right? So like, I'm just not like, look, they're fine, okay? They're having a fun little season, and they tried to blow it against Purdue, they tried to blow it against Virginia, and so it's just I don't really want to hear about their 4-3 team that is 6-1 like Notre Dame would be. And so I just think Notre Dame's better than them. And I'm not saying like Syracuse, like it's not even about Syracuse. Notre Dame should beat the Syracuse team.
Should.
And if Notre Dame had taken care of business against Stanford, then no one would have any issue with saying that.
Correct.
So I don't want to hear about it. I think Marcus Freeman needs to get them ready to win this game, and they need to win the game.
Right.
That's what I think.
I hope they do. And I do think, like I said, something about Drew Pine away from Notre Dame Stadium is a different quarterback. So I think we do see the Pine that we saw in those two games. Our buddy Chris Jenkins asks us, he says, so now that Frank has denounced his role as the Pine fan club president, are we all ready for some peanut butter and jelly time? I don't know if we need to explain that to anybody. We maybe do. I don't think we do. If you don't, just Google peanut butter and jelly time Family Guy and you'll figure it out. Honestly, I was ready for it on Saturday because I think it was just clear that Pine was not playing well. And I get why you don't, because it's like if you bench Pine when you do, then it's like then yeah, he does lose all confidence. So I get it. And it wasn't like Notre Dame was ever in danger of losing. But I mean, I was ready. I was really just at nothing else hoping that Notre Dame would be able to get a couple quick scores so that you could naturally put Angeli in and get him some snaps and let him throw the ball a little bit. But that did not happen. That said, I don't think we see him now unless Pine is really, really, really bad or Pine gets hurt. Because now's not the time. Now's not the time to put him in. The time to play him and see what he had has passed.
Yeah, I agree.
So Chris also then says, are we going to see Angeli before season's out? I thought he should have seen more action Saturday because Pine's head was foggy. Bring that hit up. That was kind of maybe the one way that they could have given Angeli snaps and just played it off as like, we're going to keep you out because you got hit in the head and you passed concussion protocol, but you know what? We're just going to play it safe and we're going to let him finish this one out and we'll see where it goes from there. You could have probably played it that way without him losing confidence. But once you put him back in, he was back in. There was no taking him back out. But do you think we see him there at Angeli the rest of the season?
Do I think we see him? Yeah, we'll see him.
Maybe least, Navy?
Maybe. At some point he'll play again.
Navy might not even be the one because honestly the Navy tries to limit possessions so much and we run the ball so much. There might not be enough possessions in that game for it to get to the point where you're like, okay, empty the benches.
Yeah.
So and then third is from Chris is where's the Montana-esque play that Greg talked about?
It's on the road somewhere.
We're gonna see it. You're gonna see it on Saturday. Quick question from here we have Joel at voluntary Joel 41 says, how many play action play calls is too many versus Syracuse? My opinion, the number doesn't exist.
I think that's right.
I think that is true. All of them. Like just right, I don't understand it. I don't understand it, Greg. It's not making sense. Our friend Evan, Elo's son 8, says, what do you make of the limited snaps for Kizer? More about scheme than his play, I assume. Freeman actually addressed that today, that Kizer had a deep leg bruise, and that's why we really didn't see him. So we'll go to his next question. How do they handle Estime's playing time with his fumbles? Which is a really good question. We didn't talk at all about Estime losing his third fumble in third fumble in three games. Is not good. So how do you – or no. Yeah, no, third fumble in four games. Or did I do my numbers wrong? No, yeah, third and four.
So no, you got it right.
Three fumbles lost in four games. I was confusing the order in my head there for a second of when the games were. I mean, I don't think you can't not play him. And I think you almost have to start to build his confidence back up. Because Freeman said today that, you know, he's harder on himself than the coaching staff is right now, and he's taking it really hard, which is what you want. So I think you got to give him snaps, maybe even early, to build some confidence. But it's a dangerous game right now, you know. What do you think? How do you see them handling his playing time?
Well, they've been giving it to him late anyway. So I would expect that to continue.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he'll get his run. I mean, you're going to sit him in the game because it's like, look, dude, you can't put on the ground. Like, yeah. Especially when both of these fumbles are, you know, sometimes like you're running and the guy comes from, you can't see him and he gets his hand in there and they rip it out. Right. And no fumble is acceptable, but sometimes you kind of understand.
Right.
When it's like the guy is in front of you and he squares you up and it's just a big hit that you see coming and then you fumble. So you can't fumble in that spot. You just can't.
Right.
And look, Estime knows, right? That's why he's hard on himself, because he knows, like, I can't do that. And so it's like, look, man, we're gonna go with Logan right now. And at any point, we can call your number, right? And I think part of it, too, is I don't know that it was a conscious choice to be like, we're not putting you back in this game. I think Diggs just was feeling it, right? Yeah. I think he was feeling good. And so they went with him. You know, they didn't really – it's not like they put Tyree in a bunch at that point, right? It was – Diggs had 13 carries going into the fourth quarter, and they gave him 15 carries in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not like they gave Tyree a bunch of work. It was basically just Diggs. Right. So I think it's fine. He'll be fine. And it's just one of those things. You just got to learn from it.
Yeah. You know who he was? I was trying to think of this when I saw the question earlier. You know who I was reminded of? Notre Dame running back. Had some fumble problems early in his career. Somewhat similar to Estime. Somewhat.
Hmm.
Jonas Gray. Gray had fumble problems early. He wasn't as big as Estime, but he was a bigger back who had some good speed. He had fumble issues. Was it Navy game, I'm thinking, where he had a really costly one? I want to say it was Navy 08, top of my head. But when he was a younger back, he had some issues, putting the ball on the ground. And he figured him out, and he turned into a pretty damn good running back who, you know, unfortunately had his Notre Dame career cut a little bit short, you know, when he tore his ACL on senior day, and then was just never kind of quite the same. So we've seen it happen before where a younger back – comes in and has fumble problems and figures it out. So a lot of time for Estime to figure it out too. Last question from Evan. How obvious is it that Frank made a deal with the sports gods to sacrifice Notre Dame's season in favor of his Phillies and Eagles? I mean, pretty clear, obviously. But no. Honestly, I love my Eagles. Phillies are, honestly, as now I'm super fan. But are probably like fourth in my pecking order, to be honest, of teams. It's like Notre Dame and the Eagles, then the Sixers, and then the Phillies. And then like way down is the Flyers. I can get excited for the Flyers for playoff hockey because playoff hockey is fun. But the Flyers have been real bad for a long time too. But No, I honestly, I've seen the Phillies win a World Series in my lifetime, in my adult lifetime, in 2008. I've seen the Eagles win a Super Bowl in my adult lifetime. I don't remember Notre Dame winning a championship, so I would not make that deal, even if it was offered, had been offered to me in August timeframe. I would not have made that deal. However, that said, I am going to enjoy the hell out of the Phillies and Eagles both playing really good, really, really good sports right now because I need it since Notre Dame is not. And the Sixers lost their first three games of the season before finally winning one tonight. So I'm going to ride it out as long as I can. And hopefully not get into too much trouble at home with all of these games coming up over that 8-9 day stretch. So it's going to be fun, though. Follow along on Twitter to find the roller coaster of my sports life over the next 2 weeks. Last question from Jack O'Sullivan says, is it fair to be frustrated after a 23-point win where the win was never in question? Jack, if you've listened this far, I think you realize we both think it's fair because we both were. anything to add to that one?
No, not really.
it's like it'd be different, I think, if Notre Dame didn't squander all of the opportunities. Like if Notre Dame scored 44 points, but like all of the points came on like nice long sustained touchdown drives, right? Or maybe you had like six touchdowns and a field goal and a missed extra point or something like that to get to 44. Then I think you're looking at it a little bit differently. At least versus like Notre Dame could have scored 70 points in this game and like with all of the opportunities that they had and they did not. And I think that's what's frustrating about it. Last question he had was, will Estime be sidelined much of the rest of the season due to his fumbling problems? What's going on with him? We already kind of touched on that. So no, I don't think he'll be, he's going to get carries in the Syracuse game. I do not think they're just going to put him on, on ice and say, hey, you're not going to get any carries now. But if somebody gets hurt, maybe you will. Cause then it's like, that might, mess with him even more. If it's like, oh, I have no carries, and I'm not, when he does get his number eventually called. So I think you'll see him not as much, which is unfortunate, man. Cause he is such a load to tackle that if he can figure out the fumbling, good God. Like you talked about Notre Dame not having backs right now that can really make people miss, which is true in open space, but like he doesn't necessarily need to, cause he can just run through tackles more so than any other running back on this, on the roster right now. And I think to the end of that North Carolina game where he was just before that fumble at the goal line, it was like running through, like it was like nothing. He's just like, he'd get the ball, he'd get contacted at 4 or 5 yards, and then he would go down 7-8 yards later, carrying North Carolina defenders. And I think of that and I'm like, man, he can get the fumbling. Even his first touchdown run, 12 yards, just right into the end zone.
He's a big guy, man. And you look at that, like every once in a while, Dylan McCullough will tweet out the team photo.
Yeah.
Of the running backs, and he is huge. Like that, that is enormous. When it's like, whoa, like this is when you see, like, man, this is a big dude.
Yeah. So, man, hopefully they figure it out, because it would be – I would enjoy that. I think we all would enjoy that. One question we didn't get, but before I let you go, is you brought up Chris Tyree and him not getting carries, but what do you make of his utilization outside of carries? Because it seems to me as I'm watching it that they're really not using Chris Tyree as well as they could. And they haven't for a couple of weeks, where it's like, he is not a between the tackle runners. Like he can do it, but that's not his strength. And they're not really playing to his strength. They're not getting him the ball, on any bubbles or things like that. They're not really getting him to the boundary, running towards the boundary. And it just seems like he's doing fine. He averaged like 4.5 yards a carry last game, but it's like, you want to get a long run, like get him the ball on the outside and let him, get one crease and go.
You do want that. Yeah, I mean, they threw, you know, they threw him the ball, and the ball was over his head, so that was going to be a touchdown.
True.
They had another screen dialed up for him that missed. So, they tried a couple of those things. The thing with Chris Tyree is that, you know, you get him in space, right? Generally, you got to make someone miss. And Chris Tyree is not very good at that. Mm. I was actually looking it up today. So he has, in his career, he has 225 carries. And he has 23 missed tackles forced over those 225 carries. Last year, Kyren had 205 carries and had 58 missed tackles forced. Whew. It's like you need, and look, they've given him jets before, right? It's not like it's just this year. Like in previous years, he's gotten six missed tackles. His freshman year, I want to say it was 10. He's just not that kind of guy. And, you know, like on the kickoff return, right? Who did he make miss? The kicker. Congratulations. Think of the play against Alabama where they threw him the screen and he gets down the sideline. And he ended up running out of bounds. He stepped on the line as he's running. I mean, so it's just kind of like, man, I don't know. Like, a lot of people are complaining about the way he's used, and I get it, right? But there was another play where, what game was it? Was it Stanford or was it? He was on the perimeter, or maybe it was BYU. He's on the perimeter and he's cutting up, and it's like, it's him and one other player, in space and all those things. And he just falls. He chops his feet and falls. I just feel like he's got to help himself. You know, I think he gets enough opportunities. He just got to help himself a little bit and stay on his feet, make some people miss, you know, make some things happen. So.
You know how many missed tackles Audric Estime has forced already this year?
What is it, 20?
20.
Yeah.
In 79 attempts.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
And that's the running through people variety. It's not juke moves. Oh, yeah. But then that's his strength, right? Like, that's what he does.
Yeah. He's got to get that ball security underway under wraps, he's gonna have something. So, all right, man, that's all of our questions. It's all we had on our agenda for today. If you are still listening, if you are still listening, hopefully you already heard Hit and Hustle, because that, like I said, that'll probably drop Tuesday morning, and this will probably drop like late Tuesday morning ish time frame. So probably shortly after, listen to that, watch that, as well. And I don't know, Greg, any final words that you had on this, for this pod that you hadn't already shared?
No, man, we got it out.
And we're going to beat Syracuse, or Greg is going to be.
I'm going to be upset and I'm going to be in a bad mood.
He'll be upset. He's going to be in a bad mood. Well, I'll tell you what, if that is the case, might I recommend that you start watching Philadelphia sports, because I gotta tell you, it's a great elixir right now, at least this fall, for the first time probably in my life. It is a great elixir for Notre Dame football, because it's going well in that regard. But hopefully the Irish give me something to smile about on Saturday as well. It would be a real nice pregame for World Series game two. It would be a nice Notre Dame win on the road against a ranked team in a game they can win. It's just going to take, probably the best performance of the season, at least from an execution standpoint, maybe second best, for it to happen. So we'll see if it does. And as always, we thank you for listening. We thank you for submitting your questions, and go Irish.